10% of the 40 Agos is in the studio with me. It's Carlos Alberto Diego. Hello, mate.
Is that in numbers of Diegos or in weight?
Both, I think.
Yeah, because, you know, after Christmas and New Year, Kev, you know, I'm not as svelte as I have been in the past, so maybe carrying a little bit more of the Diego's weight at the moment.
You and me both.
But it's good to be here, mate. It's been just such a fantastic summer of not only just sport because of the Big Bash and the Test cricket and also all the football, but just the number of games nearly every night of Australian football too. Obviously, to combat the whole Big Bash, you know.
Yep. How do you think they've fared? Do you think they've cut through and got the exposure that the A-League deserves?
I think they have. I don't think it's matched, obviously, in numbers that the Big Bash get, because, you know, that's something we've got to work on and also, you know, keep on working on the sport to make it a mainstream sport that everyone wants to watch, like the cricket, for example. Yep. But it's, you know, they've responded quickly to the Big Bash, you know, sort of almost an ultimatum there. The gauntlet was thrown down. We're playing every night for 6 weeks or whatever the Big Bash is. And football wasn't playing every night. 2 years ago, wasn't playing every night the way. And I thought that they probably didn't get the the benefits from just keeping it the way it was. So they really thought about the fixture, and I really do enjoy it. But then again, you know, any game of football, yep, I'm not a good judge, because any game of football I'll watch at any time.
I think the schedule's been actually pretty good, to be honest. I think they've planned it well. I think the Geelong game works really well.
Yep.
I think that's a good one to have in that sort of New Year's week that they put that in. And I think the press have given them their right mileage,
yeah,
and exposure that they deserve. We've certainly had pretty good cooperation from both the Melbourne clubs and the A-League in general, with, you know, getting guests on and talking the game up and all that sort of stuff. So,
and I don't think the attendances have suffered over this period at all. I mean, generally people worry about the holiday period, people going away, all that sort of stuff. But certainly the Big Bash attendances don't suffer, and the A-League attendances haven't suffered at all. In fact, I think you know, I look at something like a Melbourne City, who have in the last 5 or 6 weeks drawn 7,000 or 8,000, depending on the night and depending on all sorts of circumstances. Well, in the last two games, they've got themselves around about the 11 mark. And, you know, so if that's your average, if that's what the core is now, already the Tim Cahill factor and the Fauna Riley factor and the fact that they're doing it better this year might be paying off as far as bums on seats too. So I haven't seen the Fox Sports ratings or the viewership for City games, but certainly I think there's more people coming through. Of course, nothing compared to Melbourne Victory, but, you know, we can't, you know, it's oranges and apples with those guys there. You can't compare the two right now, but they can only worry about themselves right now, Melbourne City.
We're at the halfway mark of the season, though Victory have a game in hand against everybody else, except Phoenix, obviously, with that game that was moved because of the earthquake situation. Where do you see, have the two teams lived up to your expectations of what you thought they'd do pre-season at this stage?
Geez, what I thought they'd do pre-season, what Victory's doing now is what I thought they would do pre-season, because they had a very good pre-season.
Yep.
If you remember the friendlies against Atletico Madrid, Juventus, they had some good young kids coming through, of which some of them have gone there.
Sure,
yeah, that's right. But so things changed pretty quickly. I suppose it's not surprising what's happened to Melbourne City. I mean, they won after the post John Van Skip announcement that he's gone. But I thought they'd have a little bit of a lull after the FFA Cup final, such a big occasion for that club.
Yep.
You know, such a fantastic achievement. It's their first one. You can see, you know, even winners, hardened winners like Cahill and Fauna Riley and Brandan and these guys, you know, Colazzo and these sort of guys, they're going to have. They're only human beings. They're going to have a few downers, but their downers were one loss in five. So if that's going to be their slump, you know, that's not a bad slump to have. So, and they got back on the winning track last week against the West Sydney Wanderers too. So, if that's their bad patch, that's not too bad. So if I look pre-season and see where they are right now, it's not so different. Probably I would have expected City to be maybe, you know, a bit closer to the Victory, but, you know, we're only just past the halfway mark. But I didn't expect what was going to happen to Victory in the first 5 or 6 games of the season, where they were humiliated and embarrassed by what City did to them in that first derby. And then it took them a while. I thought it just took them a while to get it right, to get that consistency right. They still had their down moments. And even going into that FFA Cup semi-final against City, and they got beaten the second time, that would have just been such a huge blow to that club, the pride of that club, and whether maybe some self-doubts coming in there amongst the players, not so much the coaching staff, but maybe the players. And for them to recover from that and doing what they're doing now and seeing the performance they put on against Adelaide on the weekend, and the form of the players like Troisi at the moment, Ben Kalfalar, Berisha.
Rojas been terrific in the last 4 or 5 weeks.
Rojas was a bit quiet on the weekend, but he's been fantastic up until the weekend. I mean, they are purring. They're a machine that's purring at the moment. And, a team unchanged, probably for the fifth week in a row this week against Brisbane. So, it's terrific what they're doing. And they're playing as well as anyone at the moment, probably playing even better than Sydney at the moment. So, I can't wait for that Australia Day. The big blue between Sydney and Melbourne victory coming up very soon.
Be a beauty. Now, begs the question, the City coach, now I heard Adam Peacock say here yesterday that there are 60 applications on the desk at the City Group.
Yeah.
And I would imagine they've come from all around the world, different sorts of people.
Kev, what a waste of time those applications are. The City Group would have known. There's no way John Van Skip would have just, of course the players found out mid last week, maybe, the coaching staff found out maybe a day before or whatever. But the club and the City Group would have known because it was a long illness for John Van Skip's father. And he would have been struggling with that decision for a while. It wasn't a spur-of-the-moment thing. So I'm sure that he would have... He's the sort of bloke that would have allowed the club a chance to maybe take stock, absorb the fact that he might be going. And they have contingencies for everything, the City Group. I mean, they would have coaches already in mind. They would have already probably spoken to people on the proviso. They may have even already spoken to a coach in the event that John Van Skip was going to leave at the end of the year. They don't leave that to that late. So it's great to have 60 applications, but you're wasting your time, guys. If the City Group haven't spoken to you, now they're going to sit down and do interviews, I'll tell you. If they haven't spoken to you, they haven't headhunted you, forget about it. And this is where I think it's interesting what may happen.
So what sort of coach are they looking for? They're looking for, Valkanis obviously is in that difficult position where don't rock the boat of what is seemingly a good program, yet he probably wants the job, probably wants to have a crack at the job, but he can't really change a lot of stuff because they're mid-season.
Yep.
So he can't come in and change a hell of a lot of stuff. So he's steering the John Van Skip ship, really. Yep. Where does he sit? And are they looking for a coach? Are they looking? Popovich's name has come up.
Yeah.
Amor's name's come up. The Socceroos youth coach's name has come up. Who?
Gombau, yep.
Yeah. They're all internal. They're all in Australia. Are we looking to England? Are we going to the City New York team to find someone?
The answer to that is I don't know, Kev, except that you can look. I mean, you talk about the John Van Skip philosophy and how they go about playing. Well, it's not really his philosophy. It's actually the City Group philosophy.
Yep.
The philosophy that's probably driven by Pep Guardiola over in Manchester City. And, what's demanded of New York FC and what's demanded of Melbourne City, the style of play. It's interesting in the early stages, and again, it's chalk and cheese, but the early stages of the EPL, there were problems with Pep Guardiola imposing his style of football on Manchester City. They were conceding some really ridiculous goals. They weren't playing their possession game from the back. The players were struggling with this whole floating back three to back four and just adaptability on the field. And it's interesting that I felt at different times this year, Melbourne City have struggled with that same philosophy. So it's almost like it's not imposed, but it's a philosophy for the club. You're to play in around these parameters of how we want you to play. And so John Van Skip was a perfect coach for Melbourne City in that respect, because not only has he got the Dutch philosophy, but the Dutch philosophy that was influenced by Johan Cruyff, and it was his influence on Barcelona that's led them to where they are today. So the Dutch philosophy integrated into the Barcelona or the Spanish philosophy, which is now with Pep Guardiola and now back to us. So I think I'd be shocked if it wasn't someone with that sort of background, a Gombau or a Moore, or if they can get a hold of those guys. Because, of course, Gombau was a youth team coach at Barcelona and Moore was a legendary player at Barcelona. And he's well-loved and he's got that that gentleman's approach, that softer approach, that they sort of like that respectful approach to coaching.
His body language has been dreadful.
Yeah, well, I think he's a man. Look, I feel sorry for him because he really can't articulate, because of the language barrier, exactly how he's feeling. And so maybe what's coming out is not satisfying people, and he's not going to be able to expand and on what he feels is going on, and allaying the concerns of the fans on the weekend. Apparently there were protests and all sorts of things.
They had a crack at the board.
And so I feel sorry for a coach who can't sit down and articulate, not through any fault of his own, he just doesn't have the language skills, to be able to, you know, talk through what their issues are. And because he can't really do that, suddenly it's left to the board and other people to talk on his behalf, and it's probably not communicating the right message. So, but to answer your question, I mean, there was a suggestion on Fox Sports on the weekend that there was a possibility that a British coach might come in. You know, a well-respected British coach who'd been a professional over in the UK for a long time.
Out of the Citigroup system.
Yeah, well, I don't understand how that could happen. But again, you know, there could be British coaches who might adopt that philosophy, and they might trust them. Or, like I said, they'll headhunt who they want. They're not waiting for people to apply. They'll headhunt who they want. They'll make sure it's not only the bloke with the right experience and the winning mentality, but also the right temperament. The sort of guy that they want to represent their club.
Do they need a profile person that will put another 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 bums on seats for City games?
Well, whoever it is got to be able to walk in that change room when things are going wrong, and for Timmy Cahill and Bruno Fornaroli to look at them and say, "How do we fix this?" And what they say actually goes a long way to fixing what the problem is. So it could be a big name, but the big name's got to command the respect in that change room. These players, I mean, Tim Cahill's been fantastic for City. He's scored goals. He's done the marketing side of things. He's done nothing to put himself ahead personally in the change room from anyone else. Fornaroli's been pretty good this year too. Okay, not as prolific as he was last year, but he's been pretty good this year. These guys are doing their bit. So the manager who comes in has got to be a person who has got to be able to tap into their way of thinking and getting the best out of these guys. And I can't see a guy who hasn't got the experience. Like that's the only thing going for against someone like a Michael Valkanis for me, because I just think when things get really, really tough, he's got to come up with the answers for the and to players who have been in some pretty big change rooms around the world and won things. Now, that doesn't mean he can't do it, but I don't think he'll be given an opportunity to do it, because maybe the City Group will say they need someone bigger in ego in this change room to make sure these guys are coming with him along on the ride with him.
So do you need to have been a marquee player, kind of top of the range player, stroke coach to walk into those change rooms?
Well, it's not. I don't believe you have to be a great player or a marquee type player to be a great coach.
Yeah.
So it's really what your record is and what your temperament is. But I think you mentioned Harry Kewell before, and well, there's other people who have mentioned Harry Kewell. He's just not ready. I mean, doing Watford under-21s, yeah. I don't know how they're going over there. He might have some potential, but he's not ready to be able to do a coaching job like this. But having said that, they might get him and he'd be great. But if you've got to make a decision on what he's doing right now, where he is at in his coaching career right now. And I can't see him suiting the criteria that the City Group would be looking for.
Happy to get your thoughts on 9429 1116, or your text thoughts on 0433 98 1116. Mick is in Kings Park. G'day, Mick.
G'day, boys. I'm a avid Vickery fan, right? But I've been looking at the City game. The way they've got to stop it is, number one, stop being sooks on the field, because they die for everything. They might as well be in the swimming team. Two, they need a coach like Gumbel to come in, from former Adelaide coach. And three, they need to stop individualising. There are a bunch of individuals there, you know. It's the two main people, and the way I look at it is Tim Cahill and Fornaroli are the only two people on that side.
Yeah, in profile, you know? in profile, you're right. You know, their profiles are much bigger than the other players, but I think that they're guys who demand the best out of everyone else in that squad. I sort of disagree that they are individuals and they are about, I think you're suggesting they're about themselves, and they're not. I think that they're guys who are leaders in that team who are trying to get the best and demanding the best out of everyone else. You've got to remember with Gombau too, people are really, you know, espousing, you know, the attributes of Gombau, but he started off very slowly with Adelaide. If you remember, you know, he was trying to get them to play a certain brand of football and they weren't being successful. In fact, he was probably on the verge of being sacked at one stage. So, and then it all clicked for them. And like you did with Guillaume Moore last year too. So Gombau's not going to necessarily be the answer straight away, but Citigroup can get anyone they want, but I wouldn't be surprised if they went for someone who knows the marketplace, knows the players, knows the league, and that's Gombau and also Moore. I was walking in Memphis. I was walking with my feet 10 feet off a beer.
Walking in Memphis. 2:25, here at 11:16 SEN, Melbourne Time of Sport. Carlos Alberto Diego is in the studio. Josh has given us a buzz on 9429 11:16 from Sunbury. Hi, Josh.
How are we, boys?
Good, thanks.
Good, Josh.
Look, I'm a Victory fan, but I've got to admit, I don't buy into the rivalry as much as others do, Victory City. I think it's going to take a bit longer to build. I understand where everyone comes from. Just on that caller before that said City is a one-man team, look, I took my girlfriend to watch her first proper soccer match the other week. It was City versus Perth. She actually quite loved watching City play. Now, just an observation from that last call that said about City being a one-man team. I actually disagree with that. I think City just relies heavily on Bratt, Franich and Kamal. I think they've got quite a good spread, to be honest. So I don't really know where that bloke is coming from. I mean, yeah, Cahill and Fornaroli score majority of the goals, but they're quite a good defensive side too, I think.
Absolutely. And I think if you look, you know, back in the back half of the field too, Kilkenny, when he has room to move and he's in his groove, the way he spreads that ball around, he almost commands everything just in front of the back four or when he floats into as a centre half. Jacobson's fantastic. You know, Franich has been very, very good. You know, the last couple of weeks was great for the Socceroos because we need a bit of depth in that right back position. You know, Kamau's coming good again. I mean, he started off like a house on fire at the start of the year and then he had that injury and he's now just coming back and I thought he was relatively good the other week. So, yeah, it's starting to come together. But like I said, I think they've all got to contribute. And that's so by profile, the caller may have been sort of suggesting by profile they're individuals, but on the field, I think they're great team men and leaders for Melbourne City.
Yeah, no, I agree. Good on you. Josh, thanks for your call. We'll give you a $100 voucher from creatorwall.net.au, custom removable wall art for your home, your office, or your man cave. Good luck, Josh. John's in Moody Points. G'day, John.
Hi, gents. How are you?
Good, yeah, thanks. Good, John.
Carlos, with Victory and the form, I think James Ruiz has been a big factor. Considering coming back the second time around, his attitude has been totally, you know, 360 degrees different than what it was when he first turned up. And also with the City the new coach, in a perfect world for the A-League stability, I wish they would.
Hey, John, pick your phone up, will you? You're obviously on speakerphone. I don't know what you're doing, but I think you went from standing upright to doing a handstand or something there, John.
Sorry. Is that better?
Yeah, that's better. Mate. What was the bit about the coach?
Well, I just, for the stability of the A-League.
No, we're not going to get John's bit about the coach.
I think he's sitting on the phone.
Troisi's been terrific for him in the last, particularly in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. I think John was referring to James, the first stint at Victory.
Yep. Okay.
Where he was brought over by Ange, and when Kevin Musker took over, he was. And I thought, yeah, he probably had the attitude worked on a little bit, but he's been nothing but spectacular since he's been back. I was a bit worried because he'd done sort of the rounds of Belgium and then Middle East and in China, and he wasn't playing much in the Middle East and China, and you just wonder what sort of player you're getting back, what the attitude is. I've got a bit of a philosophy. I've got a bit of a theory that if you go to Middle East or you go to China, you don't come back better players. So I'm not quite sure he came back a better player because he spent time over there or because he's under the tutelage of Kevin Musket and he's demanding so much of him. And as much as everyone's talking up James Terese, Kevin Musket puts a lid on it. He did say something quite funny for me the other day when he suggested that would James look after himself at training if he's going a bit hard, and he goes, no, he trains as hard as I tell him to train.
I saw that.
I thought that was a really great quote. Probably, and he's sort of half tongue in cheek, but I think at the same time the message was really strong that he runs that squad and they're playing for him and they'll do it. They'll do it the way he wants to play and in the intensity he wants them playing it in.
In other words, I'm coaching the team and the players aren't coaching me.
That's right.
Yeah, no, that was very obvious that he made that. Even though, as you said, he did have a bit of a half grin at the time. Jackson Sekula. Hi, Jack.
Oh, good day, fellas. What I'd like to talk about is the coaching position at
City?
Melbourne City.
Yep.
There's also, you've forgotten, Aurelio Vidmar and his brother Tony Vidmar.
Yep.
And Aurelio was very successful in the A-League, so with Adelaide United. So there's another two guys, and also Ernie Merrick's looking for a job.
Yeah.
It's another bloke.
All those guys, Jack, Aurelio had a lot of success with Adelaide early on in his coaching career, and he probably tells you he probably wasn't ready for coaching at the time, but he had some good success there. But he's not really known for a philosophy of play. And this is, and I just keep on thinking, as much as City haven't been saying anything publicly, it just seems like there's a philosophy of play, how you're supposed to play the game. And that's what they've sort of, communicated, not only to the way Manchester City have to play, but also Melbourne City and New York City. They seem to have this philosophy. And I'm not sure whether Aurelio Vidmar and Tony Vidmar have known for a philosophy of play. Ernie Merry is probably the most successful coach we've ever had in the A-League.
Yep.
But, whether he's known for the type of philosophy that City Group, I mean, only they would know. He's available. He's the most successful coach. Tell you what, it'd be a big shock for me if he got it. But at the same time, he could be very successful with that team.
So do you think you have to come with a philosophy or you come and you have to enact their philosophy?
Well, I think you have to be known. Look, there's no point getting someone who coaches in the pub leagues and parks the bus all day and just wants to kick the living daylights out of it and just get them and say, come and coach our philosophy. I think you've got to be known. You've got to actually put together the coach who understands and would be probably known for the way the City Group want the team to play and bring them in. And also with all the other stuff, not only the way the game's supposed to be played, but also, again, I think the biggest thing at this level is the respect in that change room. Are they going to stick by you when things go wrong? Are those players going to have faith in what you do when things go wrong? I think that's ultimately, whether it's the Real Madrid change room, the Barcelona change room, or the Werribee City change room, it doesn't matter. It's basically, is this coach, doesn't matter what his name is, what he's done in the past, is this coach going to solve our problem when things don't go wrong?
And that's when you can have as many philosophies as you want,
yep.
But when someone knocks all the cookies over off the table, someone's got to pick them up and find a new way to do it. And that's what you need. Yeah, yep. I know, I agree. Let's get Melbourne's home of sport. Carlos Alberto Diego is in the studio. The Four Diegos back on again on
Wednesday night, every night. We've actually more than you this week, Kev. Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, and the disco night is Saturday night. We've got 3 hours on Saturday night. We've got our stretches out in the newsroom. No one's here at the moment in the newsroom, so we've got the stretches out there. We're just living here at the moment.
Luxury 3 hours. Luxury.
One sport for 3 hours, Kev.
Yeah, that is hard. Is very hard. I asked the question going into the break, how well is Kevin Muscat coaching right now?
Well, there's always differing opinions about Kevin Muscat. He just divides people, and that probably stems from his playing days.
And he loves it.
Yeah, and I don't know if he loves it, but he certainly dealt with it, and he sort of moves forward. You go back, when you're assessing Kevin Muscat this year, I think you go back to the preseason and how well the boys were set up and what it was looking like then.
Yep.
And then they hit the brick wall in that first game. As I said before, embarrassed and humiliated with the performance against Melbourne City in that derby and just didn't get it right for 4 or 5 weeks. It was just inconsistency and disappointing performances. And even we were doing the final whistle shows after some of those games and people were calling for the sacking of Kevin Muscat and sacking of Berisha and all. That's how bad it got. Hmm. There were questions. I certainly felt that they hadn't replaced Finkler. They certainly hadn't replaced Milligan. And there were some question marks about whether, you know, they were missing Barbarossa also.
Yep. And I thought Del Pierre's
the other one too. So there were question marks all over the place. And it was just this inconsistent performance. You could see the frustration in the fans and also even in the coaching staff and the players at times. Yep. From that to where we are right now, well, people can give the credit to the players if you want. But for me, that's just a masterclass of coaching. You know, the ability to, you know, get in Berisha's ear when he wasn't scoring and people were calling for his head and just say, I'm backing you, mate. You just keep working hard on the track and you'll be fine. Ben Kalfalar, who early on was sulking and when he was getting taken off and he was on the bench and Austin was starting before him and he wasn't, you know, he was being criticised for not pressing high enough with all the rest of the team when in the defensive duties.
Yep.
And suddenly look at Ben Kalfalar right now. You've got to give the coach the credit for that.
Yep.
Oli Bazanich is playing his best football since he's been at Victory right now. And, you know, suddenly question marks over Milliken is not there anymore.
Yep.
You know?
Well, Carl Valeri coming back and being over that, he's played that pivotal role. He's allowed Bazanich to play his best game.
Yeah.
That combination now is working perfectly.
But there's no accident that all these guys are playing their best football right now.
Oh,
and they're playing, and their understanding, by the way, it's only fleeting. The minute you drop off your intensity, the minute you're not playing, I've got guys like Austin on the bench, I've got Ansell on the bench, I've got Igam on the bench, and these guys tend to make an impact when they come on. So he's got that beautiful feel, that momentum that's built around intensity at training and playing and knowing that if you get complacent at all, you're out of that side. And I think that's just an environment built under pressure by a coach, and that's damn good coaching.
Yep.
And for me, it's a masterclass of coaching.
Okay.
And there's not many coaches that can do that.
Off the SMS... Justin wants to know, Maxi Beister, will he be a starting player for Victory? I thought he was meant to be a star for us, but he looks disappointing and isn't even getting decent minutes off the bench. Well, he wasn't even on the bench.
Well, Kevin Muscat answered that question prior to the Adelaide game and said, we're not here to gift anyone a game. Doesn't matter who's come from overseas and where we've recruited, we're not gifting anyone a game. And I think that might have been a message that he may be working too hard at training and he might just be a bit fatigued because he's got a bit of catch up to do, or he might not be training as hard as he should be. I thought he did okay against, he came on in a goal, was it Sydney? No, it's not Sydney, West Sydney, when they beat him 4-0 over there. So he started that game and I thought he gave them something. But certainly, who do you replace? Do you replace Rojas? Do you replace Berisha? Do you replace Troisi? Do you replace Ben Kalfalar?
No, there's no room.
So just keep on banging down the door at training and see where you go from there.
Michael's in Sunshine. Hi, Michael. Thanks for calling us.
My pleasure, mate. Carlos, you're a marvel, mate. I love the way you described Master there. That was fantastic of you. But look, if you had a look at the Victory side last year, they definitely needed a couple of brilliant midfielders to feed the ball to Berisha. That was what was lacking, I thought. This year, haven't they thrilled us to bits? Come on, you must be excited to watch these guys just keep on pumping the ball in there and just bringing the game alive. Every thrust forward is something to be proud of, and I just think it's fantastic what the Victory's done, mate. So whether it's Muskie or other people around him, but whatever it is, it's just fantastic to watch at the moment, is it not?
Yeah, the culture is set by the coach. I mean, the playing culture, the club culture is set by years and years of throughout their existence. But the playing culture and the expectations are set by the coach. And, of course, that flows onto the coaching staff, and they know their role also, and the leaders of the team. Watching them play against a desperate Adelaide on the weekend, it was brilliant to watch because they didn't have it all their own way the whole game, but you knew that they were up for the battle in 33 to 34 degree heat, and there was no excuses. They still pressed high. They still had to work very hard. Very hard. There was no, just because it's hot, we're going to just sit back and just exhaust. No, we're going to go hard. We're going to back ourselves. And when those four, you know, the four prongs, Troisi, Berisha, Rojas, and Ben Kalfalar, when they get let loose, especially when there's a turnover in certain areas for the other side, it's just frightening. I don't know how someone, the defence of the opposition or the goalkeeper, you know, really can keep their composure, because when they go at you, they know exactly what to do and they can cut you up. And as much as it wasn't super, super dominant last Friday, you always knew they were in control and they just did the business. And that they're in that frame of mind, just doing the business now, but not doing it where there's any complacency at all. They're really a really purring machine right now, Melbourne Victory.
Michael, thanks for your call. Really good question from Krazza, which is unusual in itself. Off the SMS, how is Rojas not a success overseas? Given what we've seen this year, it's a good question.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not 100% sure, but I believe he was picked up by Stuttgart, and they had high hopes for him in the German Bundesliga. And I'm pretty sure when he went there, he either got injured straight away or there was a change of coach. There was some. I'm sure our listeners would know the exact situation, but those sort of things happen. You go there, you're raring to make an impression. You really want to establish yourself in this club, and suddenly either injury or the coach is sacked who bought you, and the new guy comes in and says, "Well, who are you? You know, you're not such a big guy, and you're from New Zealand. What do I got? You know, there's other guys from around the world I can pick up." So I'm not sure whether it was a coaching issue or whether an injury, but it did set him back when he first got there, and he was just catch up from there. And Stuttgart had a second division team that he went off and played there for a few games, but he hardly played at Stuttgart. It's only in the year before or the season before he came to Victory, he was in Switzerland playing there, and he sort of put together about 30 games, 30, 33, 34 games. And so he did come back having played a little bit of football in Europe, but with a point to prove too. And geez, hasn't he exploded? It's been fantastic. And that's, you know, when you've got someone like him, you suddenly don't lose Barbarousis for me. When something like, you just forget about Barbarousis because this guy's, I think, is even better than Barbarousis.
Someone's saying he got a broken leg in his first practice match.
Yeah, something like that. Oh, well, no, Bernie Abini, unless it's the same. Bernie Abini had the broken leg in Belgium when he first went in his first training session. He broke his leg. So maybe Rojas had the same. But I know he had some issue early on. I know it's out of
fashion and a travel on through. 7-3 here at 11:16 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. And home of the A-League this week. Whoa, two games.
Absolutely. But just before we go, tomorrow night on the Diego's Wednesday night edition, we're actually speaking to Kaz Batafta. Melbourne Victory fans would know Kaz a young prodigy in Australian football, and he was at Victory for a while. Well, at the tender age of 22 or 23, he's actually a CEO of a professional club in Laos.
Is he really?
Absolutely. I don't think he's playing anymore. I think he's just throwing his hat into the ring of administration. And I just thought it was just a really riveting type of story. So we're getting him on and speaking on the Diego's tomorrow night. Kaz Batafta, lovely, lovely guy.
Good stuff. And then Thursday night, we got live for the City game on Thursday.
Yep, against
night.
Adelaide. Absolutely. And we'll do the final whistle after that. And then Friday night, we've got the Melbourne Victory versus Brisbane Roar. What a big game that is. Brisbane Roar will be up for that one. And of course, we'll do the final whistle after the broadcast there too.
All right. Now, we're talking about coaching. We're talking about Kevin Muscat. Is he a potential, is he the next Socceroos coach?
If we had more time, I would love to throw it out because...
Give us a quick call if you want.
I don't know. I'm not sure whether anyone has seriously considered Kevin Muscat as being a replacement for Ange Postecoglou.
Do we have to start thinking about that?
I think so. I'd be surprised if Ange stayed after the next World Cup. Not win or lose, but I mean, if they do well or don't do well, I think he has... shelf life, Ange himself. He just moves on to the next big thing, which means we need to start thinking about who the next coach is going to be. And the flavour of the month is an Australian coach. I think with what Ange has done, they'll look at Australian coaches a lot closer. And the only three that I can think of at the moment are Arnold, Popovich, and you've got to throw Muscat in that right now.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, a lot of people wouldn't, you know, and the suggestion that Kevin Muscat could maybe be the next coach of Australia, I think that would divide people.
But you've got to dismiss Kevin Muscat, the player, out of the equation. You've got to dismiss that.
Absolutely.
You've got to forget that. Yeah. You've got to get over it. Different...
No, for football fans, Kevin, you know, working in sport, they're like elephants. Long memories, mate. They don't forget.
And they sit in the corner of the room, apparently, most of them. Robert's in Caroline Springs. Hi, Robert.
How you going, guys? How are you?
Yeah, good Rob.
That's all right. First of all, in relation to Kevin Muscat, Socceroos, I reckon still early days anyway. He's doing a mighty fine job at Victory. So.
Oh, we're talking about 2019, though, after the next World Cup there, Rob?
Yeah, possibly. Listen, the way he's got the boys together since the start of the season, in the slump, it's been really good. But listen, we'll see how we go. But my question to you, Carlos, I'm thinking, in the next couple of years, possibly even next year. Obviously, Berisha's aging and all that kind of stuff. Slow down the other two. Thinking someone, maybe Victory goes someone for a McLaren. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, he's a Victorian boy. He's a Melbourne boy, and his family's here. And there has been rumours at different times that he'll come back to Melbourne. They certainly do need some depth. The two areas, they're going along beautifully right now, but the two areas I don't think they've got depth is the Berisha type player.
Howard's the backup, isn't
he? Yeah, he's too young. He's not going to be as prolific as Berisha.
Oh, no.
And as dominant as Berisha is in that position right now. He's not ready for that. And I think Troisi, I think they struggled when he wasn't there with the injury. I don't think they've got the player to can do that job for you. But you don't get someone in who expects a senior game right now as part of your depth. You've always got to try and find someone who can come in and do a job when these guys are injured until they're ready to move on. But certainly, Rob, I think Jamie McLaren is certainly a big chance. But I think he's got designs on getting overseas again too. He's a kid who probably didn't reach what he wanted to when he was at Blackburn Rovers overseas as an earlier stint a few years ago. And I think he wants to go back over there too.
Robert, thank you very much for your call from Caroline Springs. Give you a couple of tickets to see Victory take on the Roar on Friday night at Amy Park. Starts at 7:50, so you can head off to that. And then, of course, jump in the car and on your way home, listen to the Diego's straight up. What a good night.
And when you're going out to the disco on Saturday night, we're on Saturday nights now too.
Headphones in.
Absolutely. Just as you're going off your disco, your nightclubs, just stick it on. And keep it on. Yeah, you got the app.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just listen to us in the nightclubs.
Yeah, everyone has their phones out in nightclubs anyway. No one will know what you're doing, and you'll be sitting there listening to the Diego's. Why wouldn't you? Hey, the young boy that went to Holland from the Victory. Was
Thomas
he,
Deng?
No, the other one.
Seb Pasquale.
Yes,
yep.
Seb Pasquale. Was he the Troisi heir apparent?
Yes. I think yeah, good point there.
I reckon they had that plan, yes. And then all of a sudden someone's come and cherry-picked him and said, you're coming over here,
yes,
to see us in Holland.
Absolutely, and he probably would have thrown that balance, that squad balance that we're talking about. So you're right, Kev, and I don't think they've found the replacement, but where do you find a prodigy? I mean, because that's what we're talking about, and because it's got to be a player who's not overly concerned about playing every week for 90 minutes. It's got to be a player who's happy to come in and do a great job. I think City, you've got a couple like that. You know, Daniel Arzani's a young boy.
Oh, I've seen a little bit of him.
Oh, yeah, precocious type, who apparently, as a young kid, throws himself around at training a bit with all the big millionaires that are playing in that squad. So they're the sort of guys these clubs should be trying to unearth. And I'm sure they are trying to unearth them, but they're the ones that they've probably missed. They don't have one of those at the moment, maybe. Okay. So
look forward to tomorrow night from 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock.
From 10 o'clock tomorrow
10 o'clock
night.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, no, Wednesday night's 11 o'clock. Sorry, it's 11 o'clock.
See, that's why I can't keep up. You can't keep up.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after the game on Thursday night, and after the game on Friday night, and then disco time. Oh, party time! The mirror ball and the 40 agos. You could want anything more than that on a Saturday night. Thank you, Carlos.
Thanks, mate. Good on you.
Always good to catch up. Carlos Alberto Diego in the studio.